This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is the angel to my hopes and dreams. It's Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Matt, how you doing, sir?
You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. Hey, oh, wrong film. Anyway, I'm doing very well, my friend. That will become apparent what I'm on about very shortly, guys. Yes. But I am doing very, very well. Spooky season has gone. Little bit sad about that. But as John mentioned last week, it's festive season. Now, festive season actually probably started in August for most shops. But it's festive season. We're getting the Christmas films. We're getting the Oscar bait films coming out. We're still getting blockbusters. We're getting new trailers for new films coming out next year. Things are starting to ramp up a little bit. So I'm very excited about that. But how are you, really, my friend? Are you keeping Florida safe and well?
I am. I'm really hoping that the actors and SAG is able to get their demands met so that the strike can end and that we hopefully will get movies next year, because it's getting scary with some of the stuff getting pushed back and the uncertainty of it all. And again, I want SAG to get what they're demanding. I can't believe it's taking so long. And especially because it seems to be the AI stuff that's hanging everything up, which is frustrating. Like that they want this use of an extras image for ever. And that's horrifying for so many reasons. But listeners, Matt just mentioned that spooky season's over and the festive season's here, but I think we found a movie this week that merges those two ideas pretty well. We're talking about a movie, though. This is an unusual thing for this podcast, but we're going to be getting into a movie that's not quite out yet. When you're hearing this, you probably will not have been able to see it yet. But it will be out this week in a limited release, and then eventually, we don't know when yet, on Shudder. Which again, Shudder is not a sponsor of this podcast, but I think that's a fun kind of twist, Matt, because you brought up spooky season being over, and I know how much you love that season. And yeah, we're both Christmassy people. I think we like the holidays, we like the atmosphere. I think we both like Christmas movies for the most part. Starbucks, and to be fair, all the coffee shops essentially, because Starbucks does it, and so all must follow. The winter flavors are out now. Have you had any of the holiday festive coffee flavors yet?
Well, I had the Panettone one last week, which I thought was a delight. I had a hazelnut hot chocolate and a peppermint hot chocolate during the week as well. Especially the peppermint one comes out more so at this time of the year. And what was the one? Was it gingerbread? Might be the gingerbread one I had as well. But I am now trying to cut down how many coffees I have during the week. But I have made sure I've indulged. And as much as I am going to cut down, I will always make allowances for one or two a week. Well, firstly, it saves money. Secondly, calories. Yeah. Thirdly, it's once a year. I know we've still got many more years left on this earth, but still, I want to make sure I get the most out of festive season.
Agreed.
Marketing gimmicks for as long as I can.
Yeah, they are expensive, and they've only gotten more expensive. And I have pretty nice coffee making equipment here, not to the level, but I've invested in having stuff here. And I do have the holiday flavors from Nespresso in my house already. I've got gingerbread and peppermint. And that's like today. Instead, I was going to get yesterday I got another of the sugar cookie almond milk lattes from Starbucks, because I had a screening and I had to go right from work to editor for Burke Reviews, David, his place. And so there's literally a Starbucks like in front of his area. So I was like, well, I'm just going to I'm going to grab the Starbucks before I go to his house. And I did. And so, if I was going to get one on the way home today, because I'm like, I like to have a coffee before we record, middle of the day, you know, I need to pick me up because this is like 2 o'clock for me, listeners, 3 o'clock. I was like, you know what? I don't need to spend the $6 because I have a screening tomorrow night. So I need to be able to, like, when I have screenings, I go right from work to the screening. So I need to be able to get food. I don't need to drop $30 each day I have a screening. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm like, I got to chill with the Starbucks, especially on the days where I don't need to, when I have the ability to make it myself. So that's what I did. I made a nice peppermint mocha coffee here at my house, and it's quite tasty. But listeners, if you haven't yet indulged, it is, Matt's completely right. Like, the peppermint mochas are like 400 calories. I try to avoid those from the store as much as I can. They are really good. And they used to have a skinny one, and I don't know what happened, Starbucks. People still like the lower calorie options. I don't know why that's not a thing anymore. We know that alternative sweeteners exist, so why don't you have it that way? Every time one of the soda companies releases a new flavor and they don't offer it in a zero, I'm like, why can't you make this one in a zero? You made that one in a zero. It feels like you could make all of them in a zero.
And you feel like we're in a more health conscious world now. I say that as somebody who's been to the gym, but I feel like we're in a more of a health conscious world where people are, you know, there are much more many more options, like a skinny or a zero or vegan options as well. Whereas, you know, you'd think someone like Coca-Cola, who may be the devil, I don't know, but you'd think any ways they could make money, they would do. Yeah. Let's make a zero version of this or a caffeine-free version. Caffeine-free, there's not enough of those, my friend.
I never know, Matt, what transfers from both of our countries. Like, do you have cream soda in the UK? Is that a thing?
Yes, we do. Usually it's, we have our own version of it. And then we have, in the American sections, we have the actual stuff in cans imported over.
So cream soda is not like super popular here. I mean, it exists, right? It's there. I don't feel like most people go, that's their go-to soda. But in Louisiana, when I went to the Overlook Festival, I discovered there's a red cream soda that's very popular there.
What makes it red?
I can't give you a definitive answer. It tastes different and I like it. It's maybe like a cherry infused kind of like cream soda. I'm a big fan of like cherry sodas in general.
Same. That's one of my if I see that a cherry variation, I'm gonna get that. You'd be surprised at how much crossover there is. Some of the more ubiquitous American snacks, maybe not so, but for the majority, we get all of them.
We have Barks Root Beer and Barks Cream Soda, which is one of my favorites. And at the AMC theaters, they have the Coca-Cola Freestyle machines, right? And they have the Barks Root Beer Zero and the Barks Cream Soda Zero. And I'm so grateful because, like, most places don't have zero root beer on tap. Like, you're getting either full sugar, and I'm a root beer fan. I know a lot of people aren't. I don't understand that. I think it tastes great. But AMC theaters are testing, and only one of the many, there's like five Freestyle machines at the AMC theater we were at last night. Only one of them has it, but they have the red cream soda now from Barks, like, testing. And so I had it, and they have it zero and regular. And I was super hyped because I'm like, oh man, when I was in Louisiana, I had to try one, but they did not have zero. So I was like, this is like so many calories in a drink that does not fill me up whatsoever. It just feels like wasted effort.
There we are talking about not drinking the calories, and we're ending it off with JB saying, well, actually there is a machine which gives me all the calories I need, but it's great.
Now AMC has the zero one, and that's what I'm saying. And it wasn't as good, of course, because real sugar, there's a reason why we consume it like we do. It's tasty. But the zero, it was nice to have it in Florida for one, and also with zero calories. I'm just saying, like, come on, guys. If they're making the red cream soda zero in an AMC only, like, an exclusive thing, it must be pretty easy to make things zero, is what I'm saying. Like, stop messing with me. Give me zero options. Anyways, folks, we're not here to talk about soda.
We've spoken.
We're here to talk about a horror Christmas movie that's coming to theaters on November 10th, just a couple days from when you're listening to this, or if you're listening to this after we've released it, it could be after November 10th. Check your local listings. It might be playing near you. It's called It's a Wonderful Knife. Now, if you're like that, did he just say the wrong movie title? I sounded like he said It's a Wonderful Life. No, I did not. I said It's a Wonderful Knife. hence the horror element. And obviously, yes, if you're thinking It's a Wonderful Life is a Christmas movie, well, yeah, this is a parody of that. Now, I need everyone to know that I list my favorite movie of all time over every other movie that's ever been made, and I have seen over 4,000 films in my life. It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie. I think it is a perfect film. I think James Stewart is incredible. I think Frank Capra's style and storytelling is
spot on,
and the movie holds up year after year, and unfortunately right now it resonates even more than it used to. We see a lot of Potters in the world we're currently living in, and so when I heard about this film, when I saw that they were doing a horror parody of my favorite Christmas film, and then saw that Justin Long's name was in the credits, I was like, well, I'm going to watch that and review it. Now, I was apprehensive because as much as I enjoy Justin Long, he doesn't always pick good projects. He definitely is willing to work. And that's not a criticism. That's just sometimes you're going to watch a movie with him in it. He'll still do stuff, but the movie around him may not be the best.
Then you get something like Barbarian, and you're like, hold on, now you're talking.
Yes, and that's just it. Justin Long has a varied history, but man, when his movies hit, they hit. Like, there are some really great movies that he has done. And I tend to like him no matter what. Like, I can't think of too many performances where I'm upset with his decisions. There are some that feel like he's doing a friend for a favor, a lot of the Kevin Smith stuff. So I watched this, and we'll talk about my thoughts on it in a moment, but let's get through the stats. Yes, this is a parody of my favorite my favorite movie. I actually think of It's a Wonderful Life as more than a Christmas film. I do think it has the themes that we associate with a Christmas movie, but if you've only seen it a few times in your life, you may think, oh, I remember the Christmas scene because it ends with the Christmas scene, but 90% of the movie is not at Christmas. It is all of George Bailey's life. It's more than a Christmas movie to me. But here is the premise of It's a Wonderful Knife. After saving her town from a psychotic killer, Winnie Carruthers' life is less than wonderful. When she wishes she'd never been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe where, without her, things could be much, much worse. Ooh. So, the other part that a lot of people who've only seen It's a Wonderful Life a few times in their life, they remember the ending of the film as the majority, that we are following that early in the movie, George wishes he was never born, and then the rest of the movie is him seeing what it's like. That's the last third. That's the final act of the film. This flips that, and it is the majority of the film is her making the wish at basically break into act two, is when she wishes that she's never born, wakes up, and now the rest of the movie is that. So they do kind of Mandela effect of people's take on It's a Wonderful Life. They use that as the plot for this. And I don't think that's not a criticism either. That's just stating how they've structured it. Cause I feel like reading that synopsis, if you are as aware of It's a Wonderful Life as I am, it feels like a spoiler in the synopsis, and it's not. First like 10 minutes of the movie is all of what you just heard. So here's your cast. Jane Widdup is Winnie Carruthers. Jess McLeod is Bernie Simon. Joel McHale plays David Carruthers, her father. Catherine Isabel plays Gail Prescott, who is, at the moment, I don't remember who that was in the movie, but I hopefully will in a second. William B. Davis plays Roger Evans. Justin Long plays Henry Waters, the mayor, and if you stand in for Potter in the It's a Wonderful Life movie. Jimmy Carruthers is Aiden Howard, that's her brother, and Aaron Boyes is Judy Carruthers, the mother. And I guess Sean Deppner as Buck is important. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. I guess maybe Zania Marshall and Jason Fernandez, Darla and Robbie, respectively.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much the people that we have to address. Directed by, sorry, I forgot the director here, Tyler McIntyre, and written by Michael Kennedy. After saving her, I already read the synopsis, sorry. There's no audience score yet because the movie's not available for audiences. Usually we'll go through like the tail of the tape here. And there's no Metacritic. There was not enough reviews posted to have a Metacritic score. But we have a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes with a limited number. I think it was like 20 or 30 critics when I last looked at this. 2.8 Letterboxd. And 5.5 IMDb user score. And I do want to preface that people are able to rate both of those things without actually having seen the movie. So those scores might not be indicative of people who've actually seen the film, unfortunately. Some people will read a synopsis and immediately like, that's stupid, neg. I had a great time with this movie. I really did. I have a full written review over at BurkeReviews.com. Of my system of rating, I gave this the not quite golden pony boy rating, which is a 4 out of 5 star, which is a little generous. I don't know that it's fair to say it's 4 out of 5. I was really impressed with a lot of this movie, especially the two leads. I was not familiar with Jane Whittup or Jess McLeod. I thought their chemistry was incredible, and I really found them to be compelling characters. Listeners, we're not going to be doing a spoiler episode for this because it's not out yet. And we also know it's going to be a limited release for a little while, so we don't want to put into the world spoilers just yet. So we're only going to talk about our initial impressions of the movie. But I tend to like Justin Long. I tend to like Joel McHale. I was a huge Community fan. And so those two guys, they're doing what they do best, and it works. Justin Long's the voice he picks for this, is he always makes some pretty big choices with stuff like this. I think it works really well for the character. The way the film opens, this is the second film I think has a lot of Scream influence that's come out that we've talked about. We talked about Totally Killer. And that's clearly directly referencing Scream, I think. But I also feel like this movie is directly referencing Scream, as the killer's design is like the inverse of Ghostface. It's an all white costume.
If you want to chuck in another Scream reference, look at Catherine Isabel's character. Her name is Gail Prescott. Gail Weathers, yeah. And Prescott. Mash them together. There we go.
Yeah. Good. Oh, good catch, dude. I wasn't even thinking about the name. Even when I said it, it felt, I'm like, Gail, that's weird. Good point. So yes, clearly there's some Scream influence here, which how can there not be? You know, if people who are making movies now, that Scream has been a staple for, I think, anyone coming up in horror. Wes Craven, obviously, before that was a staple, but then Scream kind of the meta commentary on it. And this movie is in direct conversation. And one of the things that I was really worried about when I heard about a horror Christmas movie referencing my favorite movie of all time was that it would be doing so mockingly, that it would be like, you know, oh, remember that cheesy movie from the 50s or the 30s? You know, blah, blah, blah. And it's not that at all. In fact, I think this movie is a love letter to It's a Wonderful Life in a lot of ways. I think there's like a clear love of that film and a clear love of the horror genre, and the melding of the two really seems to work. There's a lot of fun sequences, but I was really impressed with the characters. I thought Winnie and Bernie were terrific. The way their story plays out, I had a great time. And one of the things that I note in my review is Frank Capra's, one of the biggest criticisms levied against him was that he was too saccharine, that he was too sentimental. And they called his movies Capricorn because they were a little corny, a little cheesy, a little too sweet.
Like that, though.
Yeah, and I do too. And that's the thing. Spielberg gets a similar thing thrown at him from time to time, that he's too sentimental. That works for me. And this movie, I think, leans into that at one point, which I won't say how or where, but there is a part where I was expecting it to go one way, and it leaned heavily into the sappy. And I was I loved it. I was just like, oh, that works for me so much, especially because of the direct reference to It's a Wonderful Life, that it leans into the sentimentality of it. And I'm like, that, you know what, with a horror Christmas movie, it easily could have gone real dark or real like nihilistic. And instead it's like, no, we're leaning into the Christmas part of this, that we want the hope. We want this magic of the season can overcome all of the adversity, can make things incredible. And I love that. I had a total blast, so much so that I was like, when there was nothing being released this week in both the UK and the US, and no real major releases, like, we could have done Priscilla, but Priscilla's not out for Matt until January.
Classic.
So like the one kind of big release is only a big release here, and even that, it's a limited theater. I had to drive 45 minutes to see Priscilla, which I did, but we didn't have a lot of options. So the fact that we were able to get screeners for this, and it really clicked for me. I was like, Matt, let's do this movie. And so I hope I did not steer you wrong, sir, because I had a blast with it. What did you think?
Well, when John Burke requests something, you're hard pressed to say no, aren't you? But yeah, I'd seen this in my inbox for a while, and we've said previously on other shows where we cover smaller films or independent films, or just ones where we're solicited, if you will. And I don't always look at the emails, so again, apologies for anyone who is sending them, because there's too many.
Yeah, for sure.
Something has to jump out. Now, obviously, the title of this did, you know, well done for the title. It did jump out. I mean, it's one I would have liked to have seen. And then when JB mentioned that maybe we should cover it for this episode, it gave me that impetus to go ahead and do it. I love scary films, horror films. I love Christmas time. Meld the two together, like we've been seeing more and more in recent years, actually. And I'm happy. Yeah. So, It's a Wonderful Knife. Yes, you're riffing on one of the all-time great films, let alone Christmas films. I know it's John holds it in such high regard, and it's clear to see why. It's saturine or not, it works. And there's a reason why 70 years later, it's still a staple for Christmas for families around the world. So as for this one, though, JB, it's sold as a horror comedy. And I will admit and agree that it is much more of a comedy than a horror film.
It does
have its moments, and I enjoyed it. Let's get out of the way now. I enjoyed it. Didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. I liked it. I had fun with it. Like you said, the one thing I want, if it's a horror comedy, and once you kind of get the tone of it, is by the end of it, did I have fun whilst watching it, or was I entertained? And yes, I was. Now, there are nitpicks here and there throughout, but I enjoyed it. It's got a good tone. There was a few things holding me back from being able to say that this is going to be a cult classic or a classic of the kind of Christmas horror subgenre going forward. But I think there's just enough there to make people be very, very happy when they watch it. The villain is very screamy, and Scream now is so omnipresent in so many of these films since 1996 when it came out. It's become the flag. It's become the thing it set out to parody almost. It's now become the influence. And I'm here for it because I absolutely love Scream. So seeing more and more influences on this and things like Sick from last year, I'm here for it. My notes, though, I have the first line of my notes says villain is angelic Kylo Ren. I was like, how do I describe this guy? I've got to watch how I phrase it. It's like angelic Kylo Ren. That's what he looked like. I really, really like the first 15 minutes of this when it looked like it was going to be when it felt like we're going to be straight up just slasher horror vibes. Like, yeah, I'm in. But actually, I'm quite glad that they pulled a Freaky on Us or a Happy Death Day or a Totally Killer and changed it up a little bit, because how many, you know, straight up slashers have we seen? Like Sick from last year, which was okay, pretty good. But we've been there, seen there and done it. Unless you can reinvent the wheel, they're much the same. Whereas something like this, at least it tried something different. Of course, it is riffing on Frank Capra's film, but I quite like that. I think it's unique because of that. So, there's some good scenes in it with the horror moments. They kind of build up to big sequences, as one in a theatre with a camera flash, which is pretty cool. The beginning scenes are very cool as well. And the mystery that it tries to weave is pretty engaging as well, once we get to where the film needs to go to. And there's some good jokes as well. There's at one point something's happened where the police have to arrive, and you can just kind of hear in the background some guy, one of the cops, says, we need more, can you get some more caution tape, because I think we're going to need to be a bit more cautious. I was like, yep, stupid gag, it wins for me. Somebody literally says at one point, you're George Bailey. There we go. Completely selling that. Bedford Falls in, or Pottersville in Wonderful Life. Angel Falls here. You've got Clarence Oddbody saving George Bailey on Christmas Eve, and you've got very similar things happening there. Mr. Potter's Justin Long, and Winnie's dad acquiesces and works for him as well, which is not a spoiler. Similarly to It's a Wonderful Life as well, if you want to compare them. There's a lot of comparison. Some of them probably do hold it back as well from being its own thing, but if you look at the title of the film, it's quite clear that's what they're going for. But I enjoyed it. You've got Justin Long is like perma spray tanned, big white teeth, Very over the top, chewing the scenery. I enjoyed him in this. And yeah, Winnie and Bernie together are very, very likable. When I was watching it, I thought there are moments in it where I thought it feels like a bit of a jump from how we get from their characters from there to there, but I can accept it. I don't mind it. But I was like, I think we're missing like a scene or a line of dialogue here or there to kind of really make these things organically connect for me. But I'm fine with it because, like I say, by the time I got to the end, I enjoyed this. But if you're expecting a thriller or a, you know, scary horror film, this isn't going to do it for you. But if you're but if you want a film which is a horror comedy and maybe aims to look more at the characters than the actual horror itself, then I think you're going to enjoy this. Is it saccharine, as John mentioned earlier on, with It's a Wonderful Life? Yes. Yes, it is. But sometimes that's okay. Sometimes with all the doom and gloom we get in films like Five Nights at Freddy's taking himself far too seriously, we need a little bit of levity. And oddly enough, the writer of this film, the director of this film, Tyler McIntyre, wrote that piece of crap, Five Nights at Freddy's. So there's that. That's interesting. He also directed Tragedy Girls, which I really like that from 5-6 years ago. I thought it was a good film. And he's done VHS segments as well. So the guy's been there in and around the horror community for a long time. I enjoyed this. It's always good to see Catherine Isabel on screen. Obviously, we just saw Ginger Snaps for the Horror Movie Havoc bracket. But I like this, JB. It's not going to be threatening my top 20 of the year, but it does not. Every film needs to. Did I enjoy it? Yes. Did I laugh during it? Yes. And by the end of it, was I satisfied? Yes. So, yeah, if it's coming out near you, check it. It's an hour and 27 minutes long. Go and check it out.
I agree with that completely. And again, even if it's not in the theater near you, put it in the back of your mind. It's coming on Shudder at some point. I wish we had an official date. They have not announced it yet, or at least as of recording, they have not. Maybe they will after the theatrical run to give us a closer idea. But it will be on Shudder at some point. It's on the poster, so it's definitely coming to Shudder. Yes. Some future date. So mark it, remember it. If you can't see it in the theater, then get ready to watch it on streaming. Because again, it's a fun movie, especially for fans of the genre.
Dude, I will say it again. Date movie. It's a kind of a great date movie, or even a platonic date movie. Get your buddies round and if you want to have a fun time, watch this. Or if you like horror, but you don't like the scares that are involved in it, this will be for you. But if you are looking for a gore fest, don't invite the gore hounds round because they will be disappointed. But I think this will do well when it comes out. I think people will enjoy it.
I do too, and that's I think that's our review.
Yes, sir.
For It's a Wonderful Knife. Again, we're not going to talk spoilers because it's not really available just yet, and we don't want to ruin it for other people. That said, let's move to our next segment. This is Chopped Headlines, movie or pop culture news that caught our attention since the last time we recorded. And listener, a little spoiler for episodes to come. Our last official segment of Chopped Headlines. We're going to be mixing it up a little bit, adding something slightly new, similar.
Exciting.
Something slightly new in the upcoming weeks. But no worries. Before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit of headlines. So, Matt, what's your headline for the week?
Well, we like to talk, and when we change things up, it gives us a chance to talk about films more, which is always a win. Now, I had this one down in the hope that it would appear before we recorded, and lo and behold, the movie gods came to us and gave us the first teaser trailer for the sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, and we now have a title for it. I'd like to know John's opinion on the title, which is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. John, before I dive into any more, there's your title, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Cool, I dig it. What do you think of that title, Frozen Empire?
I don't know, man. I've seen the trailer, so I have a little bit of context. It's hard to separate it now. But if you just told me the title, I don't think it sounds like the next movie. Like, I'll be like, where did that come from?
Or comic.
Why is it an empire? You know, like what
Empire State Building? I don't know. So I'm just pulling at straws here.
Fair. I mean, that's actually that you've immediately made me backpedal, like, oh, wait, maybe that's a good point. It is New York City. But when I think empire, I'm thinking like this massive amount of territory. And what we just saw of Ghostbusters, this will be their attempt at a comeback. And now, obviously, Frozen Empire probably isn't referring to the Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. But what else, you know, like, why isn't it? Like, it's a Ghostbuster movie.
Nope.
Like, I don't know. It feels like we have Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters, that they then tacked on Answer the Call.
Yeah.
But at least we get why that's there. Like, we understand what that was referring to, right? Who are you going to call? Answer the Call. Okay. Then Afterlife. After you see it, it makes even more sense, right? Like, I think the Afterlife title is earned. And again, I've seen this trailer, so I do understand at least the Frozen part of the title. I don't know if I like that title. What about you? Did it grab you?
It did not. I'd seen rumors abound online that it was going to be called Frozen Empire. Someone leaked it. Now, I never believe those until I hear it from an official source, because there's also another one going around to do with something being cold. And I assume it's because the teaser trailer, you could see the icicles. But Frozen Empire, yeah, I don't know. It seems a bit too kind of melodramatic, a bit too OTT, a bit too foreboding for me. It does sound like a game or a comic book or like the MCU-ification of it all. You know, these kind of subtitles, and not to dunk on those guys over there. But again, it might all come to fruition once we've seen the film fully, and we'd be like, right, I get the Frozen part, which we'll mention, but I don't know the Empire, we'll see, unless there's like a ghost gang who's going to be coming out. But so the trailer came out today, 8th of November 2023. The official description was released as well. Before I talk about the trailer, the film itself, then, in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the Spengler family returns to where it all started, the iconic New York City firehouse, to team up with the original Ghostbusters, who've developed a top secret research lab to take busting ghosts to the next level. But when the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters, new and old, must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. Film is expected to hit theatres on March 29th, 2024. So firstly, thank God we're not getting Viggo again. I love Viggo. Don't get me wrong, but we had Gozer in the last film. I didn't want to. I'd heard whisperings that they were going to find a way to bring Viggo back, or another variation or incarnation. I thought, I don't want that. I want something new. What I liked about the trailer, and I thought the trailer is pretty good, actually. What I liked about the trailer is that just that, it felt different. Now, is Ghostbusters, if you're just looking at parts 1 and 2, the OG from the 80s, is Ghostbusters the kind of film where you'd think you could take it in all new different directions? No, not really, no. And even like the reverence for Afterlife, and then kind of turning it into this reverence for those OG characters, you could look at it like people did and said that feels odd because the first two were just screwball comedies. But here we are. But I like the fact that we are doing something different. Yeah, we're back in New York City, but they're going bigger at least. Bigger doesn't always mean better, but they're doing something different. We're not just having the guy in the painting again. This does feel like a real Ghostbusters episode, the animated series, with the Frozen part of it and the Ghostbusters having to team up to defeat this otherworldly entity. And so New York has been overtaken by a death chill, which apparently if you come into contact with it, it freezes you from the inside and out, and you feel it before you die. Pretty horrific stuff. So there's a killer storm taking on the city. The OG cast are in this film. They are in the trailer. They're not hiding it this time. Dan Aykroyd, Big Bill Murray. We knew Ernie Hudson was in it because he said they're in the trailer. I love to see that. We haven't got to worry about that. Hopefully they're in the film for more than 30 seconds. But joining them is, again, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Logan Kim, and Celeste O'Connor. Annie Potts is back, Kumail Nanjiani's back, Patton Oswalt's coming as well, sorry, and James Acaster is in the cast as well. He's in the trailer as well. So I know that the effects in this weren't finished. I'll say that as well before chucking all over, though, because the first thing I thought was, wow, those effects on the ice aren't good. But I know, because I've checked with sources, and they are not done yet. The trailer was dropped recently at some kind of test thing, and they made the announcement there as well. Like, look, we are still working on the effects. However, here they are at the minute. You get the idea. So I don't dislike it, my friend. We get a new villain, some kind of like big frosty villain with big spindly hands and arms. No issue with that. It's not Gojira again. Let's just see where they take it. I think I need to see a full trailer though, JB, which gives me more context on where we're going with the story. What is the tone? But it feels like Afterlife Part 2 with those new characters coming back, and they all feel very similar, even though we really only heard Paul Rudd saying anything in this trailer. But I enjoyed it, John. Listen, it's a new Ghostbusters trailer. I'm always going to be excited. The title's a bit odd, but what did you think when you saw this?
I can't say I'm not excited, because I do love the Ghostbusters, and I'm always willing to let them win me over. You and I were definitely on the dissenting opinion of Afterlife. A lot of people hated it. We were both very fond of it. I'm hopeful for this one, but it does feel too serious to me in the trailer. And like, Ghostbusters is a comedy first, right? Yes. And like, everything else is a part of it. And like, there's heart, and there is like suspense and a little bit of horror in the first movie, a little more in some ways in the second film, and it gets a little sillier in some ways in the second film. And Afterlife, I think the tone made a lot of sense for Afterlife, because we were just getting to know them. There is still a lot of humor in that movie, but it definitely has a overall more serious tone at times. Yes. Because of the grief and things built into it. But now it's like that felt fixed, right? Like, the family unit felt fixed, like this revelation, Carrie Coon, like coming to good terms with her deceased father and why he was the way he was. And so I kind of want to get back to the first movie vibe, but I like the point that you made, that it does feel like it's something different, but I don't want it to become Marvel or DC trying to be Marvel, which is a bigger fear I have.
Agreed.
Because everyone who has tried to be Marvel has failed way harder than, as bad as some of the more recent Marvel things have been, none of it has been as bad as those who have tried and failed to be Marvel, right? Like, those feel way worse. And so I am apprehensive about the movie for that reason. And the trailer, like, there's some cool looking stuff, but it doesn't all look like Ghostbusters. Like, even the title, my first thought was Game of Thrones, like, Winter is coming. Like, you know, what are we doing? Because that's all I could think of. And I'm like, at least it's actually going to show up, because that's the one thing. Game of Thrones promised us winter was coming for like 4 or 5 seasons before it finally showed up. So at least it looks like that's going to happen right away here, is that we're going to get ice pretty quickly. But I don't know. And it makes it feel like the OG guys are going to be more prominent. And I don't know if that's good or bad. You know,
as long as there's purpose, as long as there's a reason, I'm fine.
Yeah. I'm hopeful though. I mean, I want it to be great. Obviously I'm a fan of the franchise in general. Even I like 2, a lot of people hate 2. I don't think 2's, you know, incredible. I think 1 is incredible. And I think Afterlife hit the emotions really hard for me. And I do hope they don't lean as hard on nostalgia as they do in the first. Like Afterlife made sense to do a lot of what it did. It was clearly looking to hit those, the fandoms like us in a way that we would have an emotional reaction, maybe unwarranted. And it did that. I don't need this movie to do that again. I want to feel like, all right, cool, we're back. Let's keep going. And not like, cool, they're reminding me that they're back again. You know, like, I just want to be there for this movie. So
I think, I think you might be burnt by that. I know the trailer doesn't necessarily say anything along those lines, but Gil Keenan's involved. Obviously, he was involved in Afterlife heavily alongside Jason and Ivan Reitman, RIP. But you know, there's going to be a couple of moments throughout where it's a wink and a nod, or they're pulling at those heartstrings. You know, there is going to be. It's just a way of modern filmmaking, especially when we're looking back at nostalgic or beloved franchises.
For sure. But again, it's the second movie. That's why I feel like it doesn't need to lean as hard on it as But it like you said, it probably will.
We will change.
And that's disappointing.
But before we move on, I just thought it was funny you were talking. I thought it funny. Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters Answer the Call, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Oh, crap. We can't call it Ghostbusters 3. Damn it. Give it a subtitle. And now they're just having to come out with subtitles because they can't use the numbers because obviously the outlier of the 2016 version, which I still don't hate. I think it's quite fun. Too long. So, JB, what is your headline this week from Ghostbusters 2?
To low budget Barbenheimer. Guys, if you recall this summer, there was a whole thing about Oppenheimer and Barbie coming out at the same day, and it was Barbenheimer, and there was all sorts of funny memes. Well, someone took it literal, and we are getting a movie called Barbenheimer, a low budget horror film from a very popular the link I copied is not directly to the article. Great. Good for me. I will have to go digging for this article now. I forgot all of the details at this point, but yeah, we're getting a movie called Barbenheimer sometime in 2024. And here's an article from Vulture. I had to go digging for this, sorry. Obviously it makes sense. I mean, we just got Blood and Honey, which is a Winnie the Pooh horror
Jesus.
Film. And these movies have existed for forever, right? Where you get, like, when Transformers came out, we got Transmorphers straight to DVD, and those knockoff. There's like 18 different Thor parody movies that when Thor came out. Like, there's one with Kevin Nash playing Thor, because Thor exists outside of Marvel as he's a Norse god. So like, anytime studios can one, potentially trick someone into seeing their version of the movie, or two, make fun of it, and just know that there's an audience for people who want to see these kind of goofy things. Here's a phenomenon has inspired an upcoming comedy about a doll scientist who builds an atomic bomb to take out humanity. D cup a bomb, a poster tagline teases. I'm trying to find out who. Charles Band, a B-movie veteran who pumps out low-budget titles with his company Full Moon Features, which I think that's Full Moon Features notorious for these types of movies, is my understanding. So we're getting this sometime next year. Matt, will you be looking to see Barbenheimer, the actual movie titled that, and not just the event that everyone participated in?
I wasn't, and then I just read an article which says this, John, and suddenly I am in. Barbenheimer will follow the story of scientist doll Dr. Bambi J. Barbenheimer, who leaves her perfect Dolltopia world and her boyfriend Twink Dollman for the real world after discovering how dolls are humanely treated by children. When she sees the brutality in person, she transforms her rage into her work and decides to build a nuclear bomb to wipe them out. I am in. And Charles Band says, look, it's so silly, but it seems like every other feature is dark and depressing, which is actually what we've just spoken about. And it's like, goddamn, we need a little humor going into 2024. So I think as long as everybody realizes that this is just a $1 million gag, but gimmick, basically, let's have some fun with it. I'm fine with that. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey tried to be something else. It tried to be this serious horror film, and it is the biggest waste of time I've had in years. Beating out Five Nights at Freddy's, sorry to keep dunking on that, but Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey was unbelievably bad in every way. This, though, looks like it probably will be quite fun. It'll be cheesy as hell, JB, but is it going to be, is it getting a cinematic release? Who knows? It probably dumped on Sci-Fi or something, but of course I'm going to watch it, John. Why not? Why not? Are you?
Why not? It depends on how readily available it is. I will not be spending money specifically to watch this. if it's a screener option, I'll take it. If it is on a streaming service I already subscribe to, I'll watch it. If it happens to be on some, I guess I don't do TV anymore, but back in the day, if this were on like TBS or like Sci-Fi Network or something, when I had cable, totally would have let it play. I don't currently have that, so I'd have to still actively decide to watch this. But I'm not opposed to it. That's for sure.
Interesting.
It sounds pretty funny. The fact that it exists is very funny, right? Like, more so than anything else. It's just like, wow. I guess that's one option you can take with this is, let's make a movie about the thing we were joking about for so long.
I mean, it's when I first saw it, there was a huge amount of cynicism that came in. I thought, can't we just have nice things and just let them be a moment in time instead of having to draw them out or having a, initially I was like, why are the studios jumping on this? It's not, stop trying to make it a thing. But then when I realized it is this, what, Full Moon Studios or whatever, and it is B movie through and through, then suddenly I look at it through different lenses. So yeah, I'm here for it, as long as I haven't got to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. If it's available, yeah, no worries. And if it's not available, I'm not gonna be upset about it, so it's whatever. That's my headline. That's all I got.
I take it.
Anything else to add before we move on?
No, I just hope Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is better than Barbenheimer at the end of 2024, by the end of 2024.
I hope Barbenheimer wins the Oscars.
Stranger things have happened. Got Crash winning for Best Picture.
Oh, wow. Wow. Shots fired at Crash. All right, folks. That's our next segment then. We're going to media consumption. These are movie, TV, video games, music, podcasts, anything else we use to pass the time to entertain us. Matt, I want to know, what have you been listening to or consuming since the last time we recorded?
Bits and bobs here and there, JB. I listened to the horror show and the Halloween episode on Halloween Resurrection. It was fun to listen to the guys tear that to pieces. That's the one with Busta Rhymes, Trick or Treat, Mother, blubber, and all that stuff. So it is awful. So sometimes it is fun just to hear people just having fun watching something like that. And I've been watching the guys over at Double Toasted on YouTube with their bad movie roasts and their movie reviews and just general talk. Always enjoy watching those guys. So films then. I watched a film, John. It's called Ghostbusters Afterlife. Huh. I knew that the Frozen... I've got to get used to saying... It's got an R in it, which really annoys me. Frozen. I've got to try and pronounce it, but Frozen Empire. I've got to try and get used to saying that. Frozen Empire. The sequel to Afterlife, I knew that the teaser trailer was coming out today. So last night, I just got the hankering to go back and watch Afterlife. And I mean, like you said, we were the kind of... Yeah, just saying, we were the ones on the other side of the line for once who were banging the drum for it and saying, you know, what a good time you had, and it hit those beats. And every time I watch it, I dig it. And it works because those new characters, I think, are so fun and enjoyable that when we get the OG, the big boys at the end, it hits twice as hard, because for me, it's in the rest of it is just as enjoyable. So Ghostbusters Afterlife, had a good time with that. Train to Busan, I bought that for about £1 from my local CEX store, GameStop for you guys in the States, I think. Went there the other day to get it. They couldn't find the disc. I said, okay, fine. Went back a couple of days later. It was back on the shelf, so I picked it up, bought it. Really, Train to Busan. I'm not going to tell everyone about Train to Busan. If you've seen it, you know how good it is. If you haven't, it's one of the best zombie horror films probably ever. It really is that good because it gets those basics of the genre right, but it weaves in, for me, critical things just to make me care that bit more. Somebody at work asked me about it. He said, I've never seen it. I said, man, you've got to just check it out. It's probably available on streaming. I don't know. But physical media, always try to keep as much of that as going as possible. Train to Busan and The Killer. David Fincher's new film, The Killer. Remind me, what did you think of it? Because I know you saw it last week and you mentioned it.
I'm a big fan. I liked it a whole lot. I would say it's Fincher-esque. Oh, wait.
Of course, yes. It's on the poster, isn't it?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I did like this one. I was watching, I think, I can't remember what JB thinks about this. And of course, if John said he hated it, then I would still say that's a shame, because I quite liked it. But I did like it. It is very Fincher-esque. I know what you mean, John. It is very Fincher-esque. But we laugh at it, but Fincher is an auteur. He has his style. You know, Fincher has a way of shooting his films from the ground, literally from the ground up, the lighting and any other things that makes a Fincher film his. It's here. Now, is it vintage Fincher? Is it up there with some of the greats he's done? Maybe not, but it's probably the next level down, I'd say. I'm just glad that we're getting films by David Fincher coming out on Netflix, which are readily available, like Mank, like The Killer, where we can go and just enjoy his work. Because the man's, every time I look at it, I know you have been checking out his work for the Blank Check watch along, but the more I look at his filmography. I'm like, God damn, this is such a solid, such a strong filmography for me. And Fincher, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I still feel like Fincher is slightly overlooked, maybe. He's definitely not underrated, but I think he's overlooked because look at the films he's done. I mean, even going way back to the 90s, such a strong filmography. And Mank, I quite enjoyed Mank. Again, it's not one I'm going to rush back to watch, but I liked it. But The Killer, I think, was, this felt more Finchery. Then it feels like Fincher going putting on a familiar coat and just enjoying his evening. That's what I got from The Killer. I enjoyed it. So it's definitely out on Netflix in the UK. I don't know about the States, but it's definitely out over here now. So do go and check that out. And in terms of games, I haven't played any more Spider-Man. I need to stop playing Spider-Man, especially now that the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire trailer's come out. I can take pictures by the landmarks now. But I've been playing EA Sports FC 24 with my buddies over here. Every other night or a few nights we get together and play as per the crossplay revelation. Still waiting to play Speedstorm.
Yes, wow. Speedstorm.
Still waiting to play that of JP. But at least I'm playing my very expensive PlayStation a bit more now. But yeah, that's what I've been checking out, JP. Kind of horror and horror adjacent. And a bit of football.
Nice.
Which I know you've been checking out as well. But what have you been looking at this week?
So, podcast. I've added two new podcasts to my rotations. I listen to Blank Check every week. Blank Check, the two guys, David and Griffin, have been on other podcasts. That's how I ended up listening. I actually didn't even include this. I've been listening to Doughboys still. I've really grown into that show. But the guys from Blank Check were on an episode of The Big Picture. The Big Picture podcast, they do, on occasion, they'll draft. So, like, if you're familiar with, like, fantasy drafts and stuff, they draft the movie that they were on for lawyer movies, right? So they give categories. So, like, you draft a lawyer movie for thriller. You draft a lawyer movie for comedy. You draft a lawyer movie, blah, 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 things like that, right? And after everyone drafts the movies, they put their team online in the fans' vote, and then that's who the winner is. And so that got me to listen, and I was like, wow, I like this. The two main hosts from The Big Picture, I was vibing with them. So I've listened to a few of their other episodes. They did a very extensive episode on Killers of the Flower Moon, which I think is worth listening to. Mm-hmm. I think their take on the movie is very interesting. And then one of the guys, they just drafted David Fincher films, which was really hard. They only had three people on that episode, but there's only 12 movies to draft. But they also included categories that allowed to draft his music videos or commercials, which is where he got his start.
Yep. Cool.
But it was still it was fun. One of the hosts on that is, on another podcast called Rewatchables, which I've heard about for a while. I think David, from Blank Check mentions the Rewatchables all the time. And I noticed they had an episode of Rewatchables on So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is a favorite movie of mine that I think not enough people have ever seen. So I was really shocked to see it on the Rewatchables. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give that a listen. So now I'm kind of hooked on the Rewatchables as well. So I'm like, okay, got all these things. And I finished Killers of the Flower Moon, the audiobook. It's Killers of the Flower Moon, subtitle, The Beginnings of the FBI or The Start of the FBI or something like that. Having now seen the movie and listened to the book, I have a better respect for both, and I want to rewatch the movie now. I really like the book. It's a very compelling book, and how it's structured is different, completely different than how the movie is structured. The Big Picture's take on Killer Flower Moon, they've also listened to the book, or they probably actually read the book and seen the movie. They make a good argument for why it should not be the same as the book. And I thought it was compelling. So, all of that, I've listened to a lot of stuff. I haven't seen as many movies as I normally do. And that's because of a video game I'm going to talk about here in a second, but, I did go see Priscilla. I really like Priscilla a whole lot. I was also a fan of Elvis last year.
Yes.
I think they are an interesting pairing. I like that we got them a year apart. They are completely different in a lot of ways. Do you know who's playing Elvis in Priscilla, Matt?
Jacob Elordi.
Yeah. Do you know what we have seen him in as a podcast?
Oh God, is it The Kissing Booth?
It's The Kissing Booth.
I knew it.
I would not have, and The Kissing Booth too. We suffered through two of those movies for this podcast. We refused to do the third.
The only time you've ever actively said no to a film, to talking about a film.
Yeah, and I was like, when I realized it was him, I was like, uh-oh. But he's great in Priscilla. Apparently, he's also like on Euphoria, which I've not watched, and he's in Saltburn, which we're probably going to be reviewing later this year. And so I'm much more open to him having seen Priscilla. Kaylee Spani, who's playing Priscilla, is incredible. I haven't seen all of Sofia Coppola's movies. I've seen most of her big ones. I haven't seen Marie Antoinette, which is, I think, the biggest one on my gap list. Bling Ring, I haven't seen. But obviously, I've seen Lost in Translation. I've seen Virgin Suicides. Big fan of both of those. I like the movie she did with Bill Murray and...
Lost in Translation?
No, that one I know, Scarlett Johansson. She did one. It came out during COVID, I think, on Apple TV Plus. Rashida Jones. I always mess up her name. I can't think of what that movie's called, but I like that more than a lot of other people did, apparently. And then The Beguiled. I think I would appreciate it more now than when I saw it, but I did like it, but I wasn't like
it's okay.
in love with it. Yeah, I feel like movie viewer now is a little more willing to watch something like that, where at the time I think it was very out of my norm. But I Priscilla really clicked as a study. Like I it's not a movie that I can be like, oh, it's so much fun. It's no. But it's very thought provoking, and if you are empathetic, I think you will really feel what Priscilla is going through in some interesting ways.
Going to ask the question a lot now, and I'm sure we'll be cross-cutting with each other on this one, but Priscilla, last year Elvis was this film Elvis was a big hit at the Oscars. What are we thinking for Priscilla? Again, not necessarily a prediction, will it win, but can you see it getting some love?
Yeah. I would be, given the pedigree behind it, I would be surprised if it doesn't get some love. I don't think it's going to get, like, I don't think this is her best director nomination, or I don't think it's best picture. In my eyes, maybe supporting actor, I think, is possible, because I think he's really good. And I haven't really sat down and thought through my best actors and actresses list, which I should be doing automatically, and I just don't do that. I need to do it soon, because I have to vote in like a month for the CACF. But I don't think she would be in my five. Although I couldn't tell you my five, so I could be completely wrong. I might be like, oh, no, she's definitely in my five. I do think she's really good in this. But, you know, it's such a quiet performance. It doesn't feel like an Oscar movie outside of it being these two iconic, you know.
Gotcha.
Well, one iconic figure. You know, Elvis is iconic, and I think by proxy, Priscilla is well known, but I don't know if it's fair to call her a pillar of, like, pop culture. Especially how she's depicted in this film, because she is
Naked Gun.
I think but the interesting thing about it is I think we so closely associate her and Elvis. I would say this movie, minus the fantasy elements of Spencer, it's closer to how Spencer is depicting Princess Diana's life. But, you know, like those moments where, like, we're in her head and, like, we see, like, crazy visions, that's not in Priscilla. Like, this is a much more grounded version of what we got in Spencer. But it is this kind of neglected wife perspective of, like, and again, more troubling because she's 14 when Elvis starts, you know, grooming her. I don't know if that's the correct phrase, but it feels like the correct phrase having watched that movie. Because it is, he's like 10 years older than her, and he's like, hey, 14-year-old girl. When I make sure when I come back in a year, you're the same. It's like, that's disturbing. And again, I don't think it completely paints the picture of him as a monster, but it definitely makes you go, whoa, this is wrong, right? Like, why did people let this happen? So it's compelling to think about, especially because, again, it's not like it was happening behind, like, with somebody people weren't, like, worshiping, you know, like, people were all over Elvis. They definitely were aware that he was, like, marrying a 17-year-old, essentially. But I watched a documentary for Disappointment Media called A Still Small Voice. It is filmed during COVID, like at the end of COVID, at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, as a group of chaplains are in their last year of residency. And it's tough. It's a really compelling look, specifically at one person who's going through a lot in the role of a chaplain and kind of debating with her what her function is and how to set boundaries. And it's very emotionally jarring, but a really good documentary. I caught Taika Waititi's new movie, Next Goal Wins. The second Michael Fassbender movie being discussed right now, both from this year, after he'd not done much in the last couple of years. So it's exciting to see him back, because I like Fassbender quite a bit.
He's Ridley Scott, giving him those alien paychecks.
Unfortunately, as much as I've tended to like Taika's stuff, and I've not seen a lot of his early films, I'm going to be watching Boy and Eagle and Shark at some point. I just have not got to them. I'm finding a lot of his stuff to be diminishing returns. And this movie in particular feels a lot like a mess. At times it feels rushed. It feels like he has never seen an underdog sports movie before. And also in some ways, while this is a true story, there are things added that feel wrong for them to have been added that were not part of it. And also at times it feels like he's more making fun of them than he is like encouraging their story. You know, like imagine if Cool Runnings, they were making fun of, like, why would Jamaicans have a bobsled team? And you'd be like, oh, that's why are you so judgy? Like, that's kind of how it feels at times in this. And it's like, well, that's a weird tone to take when you're telling someone's story. And then there are moments that are really funny, and there are performances that are really charming and make it watchable. And yet it's you feel the miss. Like, you can feel like, wow, there's something really great here and it's not on the screen, and it's disappointing as a result. And last movie I won't talk about, but I saw The Marvels. My review is up at burkreviews.com, but we'll be talking about The Marvels next week, so I don't want to get into it right now. But if you want to know my thoughts before our episode, go to Burke Reviews and read the review.
Yes, The Next Goal Wins, I'd heard things about, and it's a shame. I'm still waiting for a good footy movie, but I respect the honesty, my friend, especially with the cast involved. You maybe expect, and the talent involved, you maybe expect a little bit more, but I respect your opinion, my friend, and I expect to not like it as well.
Well, and then why I didn't watch as many movies as I often do is I was actively playing Spider-Man 2 last week, and I beat it. In fact, I got 100%. I did not platinum it, but getting 100% in game. I did all the things. I have all the things. I beat all the things. Something I don't think I usually do with these games, because some of the things that you have to do are often tedious, but I had such a fun time playing it, I wanted to go ahead and get everything. So I did. It took up a lot of my time because I was having a blast playing it. It's one of those things that when I beat it, I felt very sad. Afterwards, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like,
yeah.
Now what? You know, and I was like, oh no, I want
to finish it, man. I got to play it, man. Continue playing it.
Yeah, please do. But I haven't really started another game. I've still been playing Speedstorm when I can. I have a few story games I want to play. I'm kind of in that moment right after a big game where I don't want to start something else just yet. So I'm just kind of waiting. But yeah, that's what I've been watching.
Nice. And, as usual, a nice mixed bag, as ever, from John Burke.
Exactly. But listeners, before we go, we have to check in with each other to make sure we are doing everything in our power to stay bloody awesome. So Matt, I need to know, what have you been doing to keep your bloody awesome levels at optimal performance?
Well, I turned, excuse me, another year older last week. I actually forgot about that. So I had a birthday. Very kind. Thank you for the gift, Mr. Burke.
Happy birthday.
I was expecting you to sing more, but I'll take that.
Okay.
No, so that was very cool. Very nice weekend. Always enjoy getting another year wiser. So that was fun. What else? I went to the gym for the first time in a month. Very cool. And last night, yes. Upon recording, I went to a gig in London. It was a band called Galactic Empire, and these five of them, I think, they just dress up in not quite official Star Wars costumes because copyright, And they're a metal band who just run through the greatest hits of John Williams or the Star Wars soundtracks. And they also threw in Jurassic Park and Indie as well for good measure. And it was weird in a good way, because, you know, you go to a gig and you expect kind of back and forth with the band or the lead singer at least. And you kind of got that, but it's all within character and there's very little dialogue. And it's just, let's just blast through these songs. And the band is tight as really, really tight band. But turning around twice, or more than once, but I know I sent JB a few videos, but they played the Cantina Band song and everyone starts dancing and everyone's sort of jumping and putting their hands in the air like it's a disco. And I turn around and there's people moshing in the background, just fighting over the Cantina Band. And then during the Imperial March, and then later during, I can't remember what song it was now, but one of the songs, people were going like crazy, and to the point where one guy got just folded. He got absolutely leathered in the mosh pit, ended up knocking most of us over almost. But it was just odd to know that you can mosh to start John Williams music, but the Galactic Empire guys made it happen. But that was in the Camden Underworld. It's a 500 capacity venue, very small, very intimate, very sweaty, very cool night, very weird, but why not try something new every now and then? So if you like metal or rock and you like Star Wars, then check them out. Not affiliated by them, but very good evening, and also got home at a decent time as well, so win-win. Nice. For those of us who are getting older. But what about yourself, JB? I imagine you've been doing something just as immature as that.
Yes. I went to a bunch of screenings, but that's not what I was gonna say. I accepted my acceptance, I guess you could say. I think I mentioned I applied for my doctoral program to become a doctor of education, and I had been waiting. I'd been debating, was I ready to commit to the process? And yes is the answer. I after speaking to my wife and really sitting on it and thinking about it, I fully committed. I've officially signed up and started the process, where in January I will be taking classes to become a doctor in education. So not a medical doctor. So if you get sick, don't come to me. But if you need me to teach you how to learn, I might be your guy. And so yeah, it's exciting. It's a little nerve wracking. It's, you know, going back to school again for my third degree. And it'll be cool to be a doctor at some point here. Again, I feel it's one of those things where it feels wrong to say, because I'm like, doctor really feels reserved for like medical doctors, which feels like maybe we should have given them a different title, or like given other people a different title, you know what I'm saying? Like but yeah, yeah, that's the gist, man. I'm excited to start the process. But yeah, that's how I'm saying bloody awesome, is I'm going back to school like Rodney Dangerfield.
The man who'd have thought when we left school that it would be bloody awesome to be going back again. But Dr. Birkenfield, I quite like that. Feels like you're becoming a Ghostbuster in the end with all these PhDs and professors. You could be the new Venkman over there.
Well, maybe I will. Have to wait and see. But you know what we will be waiting to see? Next week's movie, which is going to be The Marvels. That's right, folks. The MCU is back with its third entry this year. We've had Quantumanium. We've had Guardians 3, and now we're going to be following up with not only Captain Marvel, but Miss Marvel and Monica Rambeau. If you have been keeping up with all the Disney Plus shows, you will be familiar with her from WandaVision. If you watched Miss Marvel, then you'll know Kamala Khan. And I think there's some Secret Invasion stuff, but from what I've heard, it's not significant compared to the need to watch a show that most people said wasn't very good. But I've already seen this movie. I'm not going to tell you if I like it or not, listeners, but I will say I think you should give it a try. It is one of the shortest. I think it is the shortest of all of the MCU movies. It's directed by Nia DaCosta, and it's worth, at very least, going to the theater and supporting your local theater chains, because Five Nights at Freddy's can't do it by itself. So,
man, we'll be back. Yeah. I'm not cheering that The Marvels specifically is short, because I'm not an incel. I am just cheering that, like, short movies, yes, sometimes it's quite nice. Like, It's a Wonderful Knife, to just have a movie which doesn't overstay its welcome. So looking forward to seeing it at the end of the week.
Yes, and we'll be talking about it next week. So tune in and get, you know, our thoughts on the newest MCU entry. I will say my review is already up at BerkReviews.com, so if you don't want to wait, go ahead. You can follow us in the meantime on social media, on Instagram, Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. Where can they find us on X and or Twitter, Matt?
At BAMP underscore podcast, BAMP underscore podcast.
And you can follow us on Facebook, if that's still your bag, like David Fincher in The Social Network, at just search Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. We are a Rotten Tomatoes approved podcast, so we will be hopefully improving forgot the name of this movie. It's a Wonderful Knife with our review of it. And then individually, you can follow us. Of course, I'm at BerkReviews.com. And Matt, where can they find you?
WhatIWatchTonight.co.uk. And just search What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials and Letterboxd.
And as I meant to mention also, at BerkReviews for all those social things, just like his. If you like what we're doing here and you haven't already taken the time, please take a minute and give us that 5-star rating on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen, because it helps other people find the show. And with that, we encourage you to keep watching movies
and stay bloody awesome. Blood, 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 blood.